Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Welcome back to the show. Junkies on 106.7 The Fan and NBC Sports Washington. Coming up at 7:40, Craig Hoffman joins us. Give us a Skins training camp preview. But right now on the Mattress Warehouse Hotline, we're joined by Jason Sobel, senior golf writer for the Action Network. Good morning, Jason. How are you?
I'm doing great. Good morning, guys.
It's great having you on, especially after such an enjoyable British Open. Seemed like old times, right? You get Tiger there in the mix. You got Rory. You got Jordan. You got maybe the hottest golfer on the planet, Francisco Molinari, there. What great theater. What a great tournament.
It really was. It was as drama-packed as you could expect for a long time there. And I know that Francesco Molinari isn't maybe the sexiest winner we could have had, so to speak. A lot of people rooting for Tiger Woods, who was actually in sole possession of the lead on the back nine at one point. A lot of people rooting for Jordan Spieth, the defending champion, and yet here comes Francesco Molinari just making pars all over the place, never making any mistakes, and certainly a worthy and deserving champion.
Yeah,
and you brought it up in your article on the Action Network. His past six worldwide finishes: win, second, T25, win, tied for second, win.
I mean, on fire. Do you have any idea where he started the year in the world rankings? Because now he's six. I mean, he probably was in the 30s maybe.
I think I looked this up actually last night. I thought he was 27th. I could be wrong though.
Okay, that sounds right. That sounds
right. Yeah, so he was actually higher than I thought he was. I thought he went through a little down period last year and was somewhere in the 50s. That was actually 2 years ago. He was outside the top 50, but no, so he was like high 20s coming into this year. So not a guy that, of course, that was way back or anything like that, but. You know, the win really reminded me of, and we did a podcast on the Action Network after the tournament was over yesterday. You guys remember the 2011 Masters? It was great theater for a while. You had Tiger in there, you had Phil in there, all these big names. And at the end, Charles Schwartzel comes out, and certainly not a journeyman by any means, a very good player, but not necessarily the sexy name that you would expect to be up there. And Charles Schwartzel just basically played better than everybody else down the stretch. And again, a worthy and deserving champion. And this one really reminded me of the 2011 Masters, where it was a guy who was sort of unheralded a little bit, but just outplayed the rest of the superstar competition, and he was able to get the trophy.
So the leaderboard is just littered with great players. But before we talk about Tiger, because I find that whole storyline fascinating, let's talk about Jordan. And a lot of these guys popped up and then popped out or dropped out. Jordan Spieth, I mean, kind of a spectacular, another sort of crash and burn. I was surprised by his comments post-round on the network. He was like trying to put this positive sort of Phil Mickelson spin on it. Yeah, I was really pleased with how I played, blah, blah, blah.
He played awful.
You just played shot 74. You missed a ton of easy putts.
76.
Or whatever it was. Yeah. You know, you basically had a catastrophic final round again in a major. Were you surprised by sort of his take on it?
A little bit. You got to remember, Jordan Spieth was in a really bad place with his game coming into this past week. He had played six out of seven events on the PGA Tour and not finished in the top 20 in any of them. And so there wasn't a whole lot of reason for optimism going into the Open other than, hey, he won it last year, so maybe he can win it again. So I think the fact that his game is in a much better place, his head is in a much better place than it was 7 days ago, is reason for some positivity coming forward. Now, should he be happy with the result and happy with the fact that he shot 76 and sort of unraveled on that final day? Of course not. But I wouldn't expect Jordan Spieth to hang his head over that for too long. I think that having one of those in the bank already, not that you don't want to step on the gas pedal and go try to win some more, and obviously he did, but having one already, I think lessens the pain of not winning it again. Players will tell you all day that, hey, I'm still trying to win. It means just as much to me. I've never quite bought that. Once you have one of those and once you've been an Open champion, yes, you want to do it again. Of course, you know, now you're shooting for record books. You're shooting for history. Everybody always wants to win, but he can always go home today and remember that he's still an Open champion, still had the claret jug, and that's okay. And I think that sort of eases the pain for him a little bit.
Yeah, he's just a head scratcher, man.
Well, I think he really is. I think Hank Haney's all over it. He's got putting issues.
You call it the yips, whatever you want. He missed three or four yesterday that 2 years ago.
Gimmies.
I mean, he blindfolded, he makes them, you know? Something's going on there. I mean, putting is a mental thing, too, but you've got to have confidence. But, man, that's a head-scratching round. That's the worst final round as a major, as a pro.
Yeah, it is a head-scratcher. I totally understand all of that. I just, coming from a place of watching Jordan for so much going into this event, just knew that his game was not in the right place. I think that's, like I said, where the positivity comes from, is that he played so much better this past week overall than he'd been playing for the last 2-3 months that I think it was hard for him in the moment to even be that down on himself.
Mm-hmm. Of course, Rory, I thought a good tournament for him. Obviously, anytime he finished tied for second, that's a great tournament. But he's showing signs. Maybe he's going to start winning again the way we thought. And the way he did there a few years ago.
How about Rose?
Rose is just constantly there. It's only a matter of time before he gets a couple. What was your take on those guys?
Rory had sort of a weird week. I mean, you'll go back and look at this years from now and say, oh, Rory finished as chair of second, contended at the Open Championship. And he did. He was in contention. There was never a time throughout 4 days where you watched on TV and you said, okay, I really think this one's Rory's right now. Even when he made that eagle putt, the long eagle, on 14 and took a share of the lead at that point. He never said, you know what, this is Rory's to lose right now. So I never thought he had his best stuff, but finishing in second place and just two shots back of the winner at a major championship without having your best stuff probably isn't a bad sign. I think you can spin that one positive as well, just as Jordan can spin some positivity towards his. I think Rory can look at it and say, look, I might have had my B-plus game, and I almost beat all these guys. I at least tied everybody or beat them besides Francesco Molinari. So I think he takes positivity from that. And we've seen Rory in the past. This is sort of his time of year. He gets into mid to late summer, and something clicks for him, whether it's mental, whether it's physical, whether he just kind of finds his swing. But this is sort of Rory's time of year right now, and I'd be really surprised if he doesn't go out to Bridgestone in 2 weeks and play really well there, and then go to the PGA Championship at Belrive in St. Louis and play really well there, and then go make a run at the FedEx Cup again.
So you mentioned Tiger, and the seas kind of parted for him there early. You know, he had the two early birdies, and he's right in the mix. And then Kisner, he was struggling. Schauffele bogeyed 5 and 6. He was struggling. We mentioned Spieth. Zach Johnson had 3 bogeys on the front. I mean, Fleetwood was floundering a little bit. All these guys were kind of coming back, and Tiger made those 2 birdies, and he's right there in the mix. And for about 30 minutes, he had the lead, and then 11. What happened on 11?
Yeah, maybe a little bit of a weird decision, one that Tiger probably wishes he could have back, tried to hit a little flop shot, had it come back and not reach the green, and he winds up making double bogey there. I was speaking with a colleague about that last night, and I said, look, wouldn't you rather have him try to be aggressive and try to create a shot and get up and down and make par than, hey, let me just chip it past the hole 20 feet and take my bogey and move on it? At least he's trying. At least he's being aggressive. He's trying to pull something off. I admire that at least. And no, it wasn't the greatest finish for Tiger Woods, and based on where he was at one point, I mean, the betting windows had – in the live window, Tiger Woods at +110 against the field, basically even money against the entire field. And that was, when you go back and look at it and see how many people were in the mix there, it sounds a little ridiculous. But in the moment, you're sitting there saying, this is Tiger's. Tiger's going to win another major. This is going to happen. And the fact that it didn't, I don't think should take some of the luster off what he's accomplished and what he's accomplished so quickly. I went back and found a quote from him 10 months ago before the President's Cup, where he was an assistant captain, and he was asked if he thought there might be a chance he'd never play again. And at the time, he said, yeah. He said, I don't know what the future holds. I don't know what my health will be like. I can't swing a golf club right now, so I'm just going to be very patient, and we'll see what happens, and hopefully I can play again. That was 10 months ago. That wasn't 10 years ago. It wasn't 5 years ago. It was less than a year ago that Tiger Woods wasn't sure he would ever play golf again. And now here he is competing for an Open Championship, and we're like, man, he made that double bogey on the back nine. He really shot himself in the foot there. Yeah, okay, he did, but I think big picture, there's, again, a lot more positivity to take from Tiger's finish than negativity.
Yeah, absolutely.
Don't you think he's got to be a lock for the Ryder Cup?
Yes.
He's got to be a lock.
And I think Jason, you've written this. I know Ian O'Connor from ESPN's written. A lot of guys have written this. It's, and I know I feel this way just being as an uber golf geek, certainly a Tiger geek. It's not if now. It's a matter of when he wins. And I can't predict if it's going to be a major or if it's going to be a regular event. But he's going to win again. And I think he's going to win multiple times. And I think he's going to continue to zoom up the world rankings too.
Yes, I think it's inevitable. I've been saying for a while now that he needs to walk before he can run. And what I mean by that is I thought that he needs to go out and win a PGA Tour event before he can just jump over. He always talks about this process, and he wants to take each step in the process. Going to win a major right now is sort of jumping a step in the process.
Right.
He's going from competing and contending in PGA Tour events to winning major number 15. He's sort of skipping that step where he has to go win a regular PGA Tour event. Jack Nicklaus said it 2 months ago at the Memorial Tournament. Tiger needs to learn how to win again. And until he does that, he's not going to be a major champion for the 15th time. It doesn't happen on Sunday at Carnoustie. You don't learn how to win on Sunday at Carnoustie. You learn how to win on Sunday at the Quicken Loans National, on Sunday at maybe even the Bridgestone Invitational coming up in a couple weeks, where he qualified for right on the number and will get to play and go after a ninth career title at Firestone. So I think that's going to happen. I think it's inevitable now that he will win again. I think he takes a lot of optimism from the fact that he, prior to this weekend, thought he could contend for a major championship with all these other guys. Now he knows he can contend for a major championship, and I think that's a big difference from where he was just a few weeks ago.
It's very close, and
so great.
But you know what? The way he arranges his schedule, he's playing the toughest courses against the toughest fields. I almost want him just to play one of these nubby tournaments,
just
like the Canadian.
He did. It was called the Tiger Woods.
Well, the Quicken.
Quicken Loans.
Right,
yeah.
and he almost won that.
Yeah.
But I was wondering if he would play a couple of the middle of the road tournaments where the field isn't as strong, courses is not as tough, and he could probably get one.
They aren't left.
Well, no, you're right. Open.
It's too late for this year.
It's the Canadian Open this week, which, you're not getting them to Canada.
No,
you're just
not.
And then the week after, it goes to the Bridgestone Invitational. You go to the PGA Championship. You're not asking him to play 3 weeks in a row, so he's taking Greensboro off, I would assume. And then it's the FedEx Cup playoffs, and you've got four in a row for the playoffs. So there really isn't an opportunity for him to do that right now.
No, not this year, and you're right. But if he didn't win the rest of the year, I'm thinking, all right, maybe next year he could play one of those middle-of-the-road tournaments in January, February, and get a win.
Yeah, but you know what?
He's never done that.
It would be almost cheap if he did it that way.
Yeah, I know, but
you know?
You just want to see him do it.
But maybe
that's all he cares about is just going out in the WGCs and the majors and the players and just getting one of those.
Yeah, and I don't think it would mean as much for him to go out to the old Bob Hope out in the desert and go beat a bunch of guys who are sort of journeyman and, maybe not the best field in the world. I don't think it would mean as much to him as going to the Bridgestone or going to the PGA Championship and going out there and beating the best players in the world.
I think that's what he
wants to do. I think that's what he's trying to do.
No, you're right. You're absolutely right.
All right, Jason. Appreciate having you on. Thank you, buddy.
Thanks for the time, buddy.
All right, Jason Sobel.
From the Action Network.
Right.
Good gambling tips on the Action Network.
Is the Action Network. I put 40 on Tiger at plus, it was 22 to 1, so it was 880.
Oh, that would have been a nice payout.
Yeah, I know. And then
it was nice when he fired at 34.
And he got on 11.
You were tantalized a little bit.
Yeah,
when he was in the lead, what was your reaction? Now, he was in the lead. Not that he took the lead, is that guys dropped back. But he was there at 7
well,
under.
Well, no, but he had a couple birdies in the front. This is what I thought.
He was 2 under.
I thought
he was balling.
I thought there's a shot here, but there's so many tough holes remaining.
Yeah. People were texting me like crazy, and here's what I texted. Long way to go. I mean, I'm an expert golf fan. I know how these things work. But my body was involuntarily twitching because I was so excited. So I'm watching it, excited at the opportunity here. But I knew there was a ton. And believe me, like 16 kills him. There were plenty of trouble holes out there. I didn't expect him to necessarily, hit these 3 irons, off the tee and get him in trouble. But I knew there was danger lurking.
But you were psyched when Spieth was leaking oil.
Of course. I was psyched that he was 4 back.
I think Tiger birdied, and then Spieth and
Schauffele
were leaking oil on that hole.
Yeah.
I think that was so silly.
Yeah.
It was just awesome. Sports.
Listen,
He just hates.
I hate Spieth, and
Valdez hates Spieth.
I don't really love Spieth either.
Why the hatred for Spieth?
I think he's a phony.
I think he might be a little bit of a phony too.
See,
but listen, Tiger's a douchebag, so there's no reason for that. I like Tiger. I don't really love Spieth, and I think Spieth is probably deep down a great guy, but I don't really like him. I don't really care for Rory either way either.
I don't know much about Spieth. I just saw him talk about his haircut. That's all I saw on Spieth.
The haircut and the frat house that 8 of the golfers were living in.
I'm a little bit sick of the frat house.
I didn't see that.
Well, that's the difference. That's just their era.
You guys watched all the puff pieces from the sound of it.
Oh, much Barry Byrne pieces.
Stuff over and over. I have no idea.
Could they mention John Vandeveld more?
Why do you call it a burn? Isn't it just a creek?
Yeah. It's a canal. It's like a little canal.
It's their own thing. Language.
Yeah. If you were from Europe. Scotland, you'd be asking us why you call it a creek.
Zero rooting interest for it. And I have nothing against him. He's just a dud that does nothing for me. Kevin Kisner. He does nothing for me. At least Rory, he's got some potential there to be spectacular.
There's nobody on the planet that walks up to anybody and says, I'm a Kevin Kisner fan.
Nobody.
I'm a big Kevin Kisner mark.
Or even that guy Chappelle. Doesn't exist. Or,
There's a lot of Kisner stories out there, too. About him off camera.
Really?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. I'm just not a Kevin Kisner guy.
I think Valdez is actually a bigger golf geek than you and Jason.
He might be.
Like, he gets all the behind-the-scenes nuggets.
He might be.
Well, he does work at a golf course.
Well, none of the members at Bellhaven are telling me Kevin Kisner stories.
He gets them from Twitter.
Listen.
That's what he does.
All I can tell you is that it was an awesome weekend. And I still have people trolling me saying he's never going to win again. And, you may be right. But I'm saving all those tweets. And they'll
so
all be
far,
retweeted.
That lifetime bet between you and Jason stands at 0-0 for Phil and Tiger.
Hey, Eric,
I know I'm going to win that one.
Eric, did you think, did it cross your mind at all that if he won yesterday, that we were going to play the celebration music to start the show?
No, because I honestly. Oh, really?
Is that what you
ever play Party in
I'll
the USA?
When I watch sports, I watch them kind of negatively, too. Like, I get excited, but I know deep down, like, my guy will choke. It always happens. I'm never happy. It's like the story. Like, sports, I love watching them, but it always ends up miserably for me. So I didn't really expect him to win.
Hey, Ricky.
But I was excited.
Look at the hat.
Yeah, it's an outlier.
Don't forget that this happened.
Hey, listen, I got that gear.
Never forget.
It's an outlier,
that's true.
Though. The reason why
this
you're happened. So excited is because it never happens
and
it did once.
You endured 40 years of pain.
Yeah.
All I need is once.
That's right.
All you need is one.
All right. Yeah. Phone number if you want to chime in on anything on the Hadid card.
Well, I need 15, apparently, because I need another major from Tiger.
800-636-1067.
Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first 3 orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Welcome back. Chucky's on 106.7 The Fan. We are live on NBC Sports Washington, presented by EMP, one of the weight loss structure. Accountability results, the standard for weight loss in the area. It's emp180weightloss.com.
You guys.
I was just going to mention over the weekend, I did see the Amy Schumer movie on Netflix or on demand.
Which
I
one?
I Feel Pretty, which got crushed by reviews, but my wife wanted to see it. So
how terrible was it?
It's pretty bad.
Pretty
the only
terrible.
Thing I was thinking is pretty cool that this completely famous comedian is a Towson grad.
That's right. There you go. Tiger Pride.
Oh, I didn't realize that.
Yeah, she went to Towson.
I think I'm going to see Equalizer 2 today.
You are.
Yeah.
Ah, very good. Well, not waiting until the $5 going, Tuesday?
Yeah, I'm got something going on tomorrow, so I'm going to have to go on Monday and pay full freight.
Oh.
And I was telling my wife, I can't even remember the name of the comedian who came in studio who said that Amy Schumer was just lifting her jokes.
Huh.
Who was that?
Pescatelli?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Tammy Pescatelli.
Yeah.
Amy Schumer puts herself out there, though. She puts herself out there to be crushed on her looks. I'll give her credit for that.
Well, she's kind of dumpy, and she knows it.
Yeah.
She embraces it.
She's owning it.
Yeah.
But it's almost a direct ripoff of Big. There's even a, you know how, whatever. She just thinks that she's beautiful. She hits her head, and then she thinks she's beautiful.
Nobody that's listening is ever going to see that movie. I mean, this is an overwhelmingly male audience.
Yeah.
Unless they get dragged to it.
I feel pretty?
No. This audience, the Junkies audience, this show,
I agree, but
is not going to watch I Feel Pretty on, like, On Demand or on Redbox or whatever.
Yeah.
However you rented it.
Except him.
Yeah. He watched it.
Somehow JP got sized.
Yeah, he likes
it. You watch any movies with your wife that was your wife's choice?
At times.
Not on Netflix. We'll go to the theater.
Yeah.
But I would refuse to watch I Feel Pretty. I would refuse that one.
Now, a movie that my wife actually suggested this weekend, and then she regretted it after we watched it, Red Sparrow with Jennifer Lawrence.
I heard that was good.
It's pretty good, but it's silly. It's very violent.
Rotten Tomatoes, it's very low.
It's okay. It's not great. It's a tad bit long
for
my liking.
He loved it.
Over at my mom's.
It's good. It's not great. I mean, let's not get crazy
and,
over there.
And my mom and I wanted to rent a movie, and we ultimately picked one. But Red Sparrow was in the final candidates, and then I saw the Rotten Tomatoes was like around 40% or 50%. Mm-hmm. Like, I'll pass. Plus, it's long, right?
It's butt long.
It's definitely over 2 hours.
Probably not a movie you want to watch with your mom. There's some
That's too much.
Yeah, you and Lourdes would not have fun watching it.
It would
together.
Be uncomfortable.
Yeah. Did you guys happen to catch? So it's Shark Week now, and I'm a sucker for Shark Week. My kids are.
Is that Discovery?
Is the material ever different?
Say again?
Is the material ever different?
I mean, there's sharks. I mean, so whatever.
I did see on ESPN they had Gronk swimming with the sharks.
Yeah, well, it's Shark Week. Which I think is a great premise. You know, it's obviously a big goof, but Shaq thought, I thought it was Shaq Week.
Right.
I didn't know it was Shark Week.
That's pretty funny.
Right, that's a good
that's
bit, right?
Solid.
It makes me laugh. And Shaq, by the way, just makes me laugh.
Yeah.
Like, I think he's like this sort of big, lovable guy for me.
I don't think we gave him any run that he was here DJing for the All-Star game. And he started the whole Barkley sucks chant.
I'm so bitter.
Wearing a Skins t-shirt.
Yeah, well, he knows how to play to the crowd.
Yeah.
But it was Shaq on Shark Week last night, and it was kind of the introductory piece. And I only stayed up to watch about 15, 20 minutes. I would have stayed up more, but I'm trying to get off to a good week. You know, I want to get to bed early. Yep. I think I headed upstairs like around 9:20. But Shaq apparently is deathly afraid of sharks.
Right.
And can you blame him? And he's
of course
doing bits
not.
With Rob Riggle, who's been on this show before.
Yep. Mm-hmm.
And Riggle is out there in like this little canoe, and there are sharks everywhere.
Right.
Like, literally swarmed. They're bumping in the canoe. Like, I don't know what they're doing. They're trying to get Shaq to do it. He's like, I'm not going in there.
Right.
Are you kidding? There's no chance I'm going in
Where
there.
Where was this? Where were they filming it?
I have no idea.
Or Florida, maybe?
Maybe. I have no idea.
Yeah.
And then at one point, I don't know if it was a bit. I don't know if it was fake. But you would think it's a bit and it's fake. But Riggle fell out of the canoe and there's sharks everywhere. And he's about 7 or 8 feet from the boat. But it was enough to scare the poop out of me just watching it.
Sure.
It could have all just been fake.
Could have been clever editing.
And I didn't catch up on, you know, because it was late at night. I was about to go to bed. But they were getting Shaq. They were giving him all the scuba gear. They were getting him in these tanks and these cages.
Mm-hmm.
They're going to put him down below. And he just kept saying, I'm not doing it. There's no chance I'm doing it. But I think they made him do it.
But he did it with a cage. The Gronk piece, I believe they were in the Bahamas. And they went out to a shark-infested area, and then he just went in there with a reporter and then a couple other guys in their scuba gear with no protection, and the sharks were literally bumping into them.
Well, that's what happened with Riggle.
Man,
he had no clothes. He had no protection. He fell out of the boat.
I guess they've done their research that if you go down there calm, that the sharks aren't going to attack you.
Well, those sharks better be the most well-fed sharks on the planet if you're jumping in there with them.
Yeah,
they better just...
I didn't get it. And maybe some of them aren't man-eaters.
I was going to say, maybe they're maybe just the top... Their species, they're just not known to be attackers.
Exactly. And they're not going to attack humans. But I mean,
but
I still
you never know.
There are like 50 of them.
It's not like the Sharks are signing a contract, so yeah, I won't attack you.
Right. Right. I mean, so anyway,
you just never know what they're going to do. That's crazy.
If you want to know what I'm doing, that's mostly what I'll be doing this week. I'll be watching all the Shark.
You'll be watching Shark Week.
I just like it. For some reason, I'm kind of fascinated by
sure.
it.
Sure.
But you're right about there's probably a little bit of clever editing in there.
Yeah, maybe they were protected more than you know. Maybe it was a bit that I didn't quite understand at the time. But
the Gronk wasn't a bit, right? I mean, he was definitely swimming with the Sharks.
Well, not so much swimming. He just drops down and they were down on the sand.
Yeah.
You guys don't get into any of those shows at all?
No.
Oh, I do. I used to have a borderline unhealthy obsession with Sharks as a kid.
Right.
Anytime Sharks are on TV, I'll
watch. I will watch those if they're featuring the Great Whites, because Great Whites are just incredible.
Yeah. Well, you never know.
If it's
just
a bunch of nurse sharks,
Well, I think usually,
it doesn't impress me.
I think they like to focus on the killer sharks, because that's what everyone's most intrigued
by. That's what I want to watch.
Maybe these were. I have no idea. They had some guy that was, I found myself on Animal Planet last night. And some guy was like fishing for sharks.
That's what happens when golf is done at 2.
Yeah, when it's over.
It's true. But that was like 8 o'clock.
Right.
But yeah, I was watching Animal Planet. Some guy was like in Africa or something searching for sharks. Which reminds me, I don't know where I saw it. But I saw these pictures of like this tribe like that lives in the Amazon. Okay. How does that even work? These people, they have nothing.
Well, they're completely cut off from
society.
They're
completely cut off, and yet they let photographers photograph them.
I don't know how that works.
How did that happen? Not like a war breakout. How did they not get like speared?
I don't know.
They knew enough that they allowed these photographers.
Luckily, they weren't Brittany.
To follow them around. But yeah, these people live in the Amazon jungle with literally nothing. They have a leaf to cover their dong, if that.
That's right. That's how they cover them.
Like a leaf.
Yeah, with
and a lot
plants.
Of them don't.
Yeah,
they're
like
all posing
like
for family
frond.
Photos. They were like family portraits, and everyone's had their number. And they didn't even have a leaf. And then they had like a rope.
They don't even know what a camera is.
Yeah.
they were
posing for portraits. I didn't even understand how do they communicate.
How do you tell people to pose for a picture when they don't know what a picture is? They don't know what a camera is.
They don't know what English is. Who speaks
sippy English?
I just don't get it. I'm fascinated by it. And then they were talking about all the medicine that they know, like from tree bark and all this stuff, like all of the antibiotics and stuff that you go to the pharmacy for.
Right.
There's some guys like sucking it out of a tree
they
or
can
something.
Make it like out of a weed.
Yeah. It's unbelievable.
The only Amazon I care about is when they deliver a brown package on my doorstep.
I'm with you.
I don't have any desire to go down to the real Amazon.
Would you have desire to see the Amazon? I saw the story
about
what they call the world's largest aircraft. It basically looks like a double blimp that has a see-through window on the bottom
If I get to see it from 500 feet up or I don't know how low it flies, sure, I might take a tour. But I'm not going to go down in some ramshackle boat. And there's a 30-foot anaconda swimming right next to me in the Amazon.
Of course not. You're not crazy.
Not doing that. I saw Anaconda with Ice Cube and J-Lo. I know how that movie ends. You kidding?
Anyway.
Not doing that.
So it's Shaq Week.
Is it 24 episode? Hours of sharks, or is it just
maybe it's just prime time?
Certain hours.
Maybe it's just prime time. I really don't know.
Isn't Lindsey Vonn a part of it too? She's like participating same way Shaq is.
If you saw that, I'm sure that's
thought
true.
I saw that.
I just saw weeks of promos of Shaq.
Thought she'd be on Tiger Week.
Shaq.
Nice.
She's down.
Oh, that's easy.
I just saw weeks of promos of Shaq promoting it, thinking it was Shaq Week.
Is she dating a hockey player? What team does he play for?
PK Subban.
Plays Nashville, right?
He's on the prep.
So anyway, that's what I'll be watching this week. Certainly in the evenings. As the Nats surely disappoint me.
And later this week, you'll get your training camp reports. And speaking of training camp, joining us next is Craig Hoffman, covers the Redskins for 106.7 The Fan. We'll get a little training camp preview from Hoffman next on The Fan. All right, it's basically upon us. Training camp starts this week for the Washington Redskins. And Craig Hoffman, a Redskins beat reporter, joins us right now on the Mattress Warehouse Hotline. What's up, C-Hoff?
What's up, fellas? How are you?
Man, can you believe camp's here already?
Kind of, yeah. Because it feels like the last game was so long ago, and so many things have happened, but at the same time, it just kind of sneaks up on you.
Was it a long summer for you, or a quick summer?
I felt really long. It just felt busy. I don't know whether it felt short or long. It just felt busy because it started early with the Alex Smith trade, and I thought that meant I was going to have a pretty easy offseason because, hey, the Kirk Cousins thing, we don't got to worry about it. Yeah, there'll be free agency and the combine and all the other things that you do along the NFL schedule, but at least we're not going to have this drama looming over at all. And instead, it still was really busy. And then obviously with the Caps going on their run, and I got to help out with our coverage of that, which was, you know, the thrill of a lifetime.
Yeah.
But it takes away some of the dead time. And so all of a sudden it's like, oh my God, it's here. And off we go to Richmond on Wednesday.
I will say that, you know, I'm not a Redskins fan, obviously, but I've got to talk about them every day from, you know, today until January. But it's going to be nice not having to talk about Kirk Cousins' contract.
Yeah, it's going to be awesome.
It's going to be a breath of fresh air.
Through no fault of Kirk's, it loomed over the franchise. I mean, I guess through some fault, he didn't agree to a deal, but fault is a funny word there. He was involved in the process. There's decisions that were made that caused, by both sides, that caused them to have that loom over the franchise, but it feels different. It feels much less tense around there. I imagine training camp will have some of that tension relieved as well, where it just felt like there was this giant question mark looming over everything. What did everything mean? And now it's just like, oh, we're going to play football, and football is a child's game, and it's fun, and it's still going to be tense, and there's still going to be intense because it matters on an extraordinary level to a lot of people, both inside and outside the building. But that looming question of almost trying to find greater meaning in it through the funnel of Cousins is gone, and thank God that we don't have to talk about it every day.
Where is Seahawks base in Richmond, and how has that relationship evolved between the Redskins and training camp being held in Richmond these last few years?
My base will be at one of the Marriott properties down there, and I'm staying there the entire time. So even when I leave to come home for the off days or go to the Patriots preseason game, I have actually signed up to stay at the same hotel down there, which is about 10 minutes from the facility, which is nice, a little bit outside of downtown. Although downtown Richmond's awesome. It'd be nice to kind of be secluded and not be in the middle of it all, every day. So then, as far as the greater relationship with Richmond, because nobody really cares where my home base is, but I figured I'd indulge the question.
We asked.
Yeah, you did. You did. You guys care. I know very deeply. So I think their relationship has not gone as they originally planned it. And certainly it has been a devolving one in some ways, but part of that was because the first year they were down there, as you guys probably remember better than me, because you guys were covering the team, I still was not, was RG3. And so that first training camp was insane because everyone wanted to see Robert. And all of a sudden, when his career took the turns it did and the franchise has taken the turns it has, the interest level hasn't been as high as it was that first year ever again. And so, but it still has been, I think, fruitful in some ways. You know, obviously they want to expand the fan base. And I think on some level they've been able to do that and keep the southern half of the fan base engaged as a touch point, basically, for the franchise. But at the same time, there's a lot of people in Richmond. You know, you read some of the op-eds and things from the Times-Dispatch, and some people down there aren't thrilled that some of the funds that go towards the Redskins and the way their agreement was signed are not going to schools and things like that. And, you know, I don't know enough about the Richmond political system to know how accurate those direct draws are, but clearly everyone's got a budget, and, you know, you can always move money around within a budget, so long that you have it. And if money's got to go one place, it can't go another. So, I think that tension is real. I think that there are some moves from the Redskins side of it with the interest not creating, you know, because it's also a revenue thing. You know, the more people that show up, the more people that, even though training camp itself is free, you know, the more people that show up, the more people buy from the vendors, and they probably get a cut of that. And the more people go to the fan shop, and they certainly get a cut of that. And just have general interest in everything that's going on. And so, with the lower turnout and less revenue, I think there's going to be a push to try to at least shorten, if not fully get out of Richmond as soon as they can. It's been fine, okay, I would say. But I don't think it's gone the way either side had really hoped it had in full force.
Speaking of not going the way either side had hoped, the injury status of Jordan Reed is one that has frustrated, I'm sure, Jordan and the Redskins. To me, he may be, if he's not the biggest question mark, he's one of the top three
Where are we in the status of that? Do you have any insight into how healthy he is? What are the plans for camp? They're going to bring him along slowly. Can we expect him to start week one? Do we not? Where are we with Jordan Reed?
Right. So as far as we know, he's ready to go for camp. I'm sure they will take it slow and not have him all of a sudden doing every drill every day. And whether that means a full veteran off day where he just maybe goes through the walkthrough and then doesn't participate in practice, or whether it's just, you know, we see him pulled out of certain things. I think that we'll get a much better sense for when we talk to Jake Gruden. Certainly it's one of the top questions on my list to ask him, when we meet with him 3 o'clock on Wednesday for the first time. So I think that he is going into camp healthy. Then again, if you had asked me basically 365 days ago, a couple days before camp, whether he was going in healthy, I think the answer at this point was still yes, because we had not learned that he had injured his toe yet in one of his final private workouts, you know, solo workouts before reporting. So that's kind of what I'm hoping for Wednesday, is no surprises in general, but specifically no surprises with Jordan. And it's, assuming he's ready to go for camp, hopefully that can help him, you know, properly ease himself or, you know, launch himself, however you want to put it, into the season and stay as healthy as he has been able to ever, because he's never completed a full season. And now seems like a great time for that with him, because the honest truth, guys, is he becomes way too expensive if he's going to play eight games.
Oh, yeah.
And so I think at this point, with the amount, like, the risk also goes down, because, you know, you talk about the risk reward ratio, and really what you're talking about is how much dead money is left on his contract. It's a lot more palatable to cut him after this season than it would have been last year. It was still worth the risk of him being healthy, and you hope that it works out. I think this is the final year of that. If he doesn't prove he can stay healthy, I think this is the final year of Jordan Reed, at the very least, under this current contract.
Yeah, we talked about that last week. If he misses six or eight games, he's gone. You got to cut ties.
Yeah, it doesn't make financial sense anymore. And so it's a huge year for him.
Hey, does Jay Gruden have to make the playoffs?
I don't think so, but I'm not 100% sure about that. You know, it's one of those things where it's going to depend on how it played out. You know, I think there's a lot of us that going into last year felt like, oh my God, they've got to make the playoffs, coming off the McLuhan offseason disaster. Like, they better prove that this administration knows what they're doing. Then they suffer all these injuries, and you go, what the hell was Jay supposed to do? And so I think it's going to depend on how it plays out. I don't think he can afford an embarrassing season, because I think there are few coaches in the NFL that can ever afford an embarrassing season. You know, but at the same time, I think that they made moves this offseason to win now, right? They make the Alex Smith trade instead of a long-term draft a quarterback play, because they think they can win now. They sign Paul Richardson and spend that money because they think they can win now. You know, and so if Jay can't win with this roster that everyone, I think, kind of agrees is pretty good, obviously health relative, but if healthy, is pretty good. If he can't, you know, if he wins 10 games and misses the playoffs because the East is stacked and the NFC's got a ton of good teams, then I don't think he's going to get fired after a 10-win season. So that's right. The other reason, you know, on the other side of the could miss the playoffs coin, you know, you had one side last year with injuries. I think this year you win 10 games and miss it, you're not in trouble. But he's probably going to have to win, you know, at least 9, if not 10, I would think, to not at least be on the hot seat. I don't think it's a guarantee that he's fired, though, if he wins 8.
Interesting, because that'll be 4 out of 5 years where he doesn't make the playoffs.
You mentioned Paul Richardson. How excited should I be about this guy's addition to the football team? Because he's not somebody I've thought a lot about, but he could really bring something that they don't have.
Right. I think Geis kind of steals the spotlight from everybody, because that's the guy everyone's super pumped about. And then obviously it's like, oh yeah, and also the quarterback's new. So I guess that's exciting, even though I feel like that's the response, and that's the proper response you should have to Alex Smith, because he's Alex Smith. I mean, he's like milk. Like, he's good for you, but how excited does anyone get about drinking milk?
Valdez does.
So, you know, when it comes to Richardson, I do think you should be excited about what he could be. He is more than just a deep threat, and that is kind of what he's capable of being, more than a deep threat, and he's out to prove that that is indeed what he is someone who can run the entire route tree with precision, leverage his deep speed to get some stuff underneath, can run after catch, if you get him on some slants and things like that, and it can absolutely run away from people. But there's also that deep element that they had, they sorely, sorely missed last year without DeSean Jackson, that opens up everything underneath for Reed and Crowder and whoever else. And, you know, to have that style of deep threat on one side and then the Josh Doctson style who would just go up and pick the ball off your helmet on the other is pretty exciting. And we know from Smith's time with Tyreek Hill that he can throw to a speed deep guy. It's still TBD, and I'm very intrigued to see how he throws deep to Doctson, but we know the deep ball success that he had in Kansas City should be repeatable with Paul Richardson, so we will see. I would assume fairly early in camp whether or not those two are on the same page.
All right, Craig, as always, appreciate the time. It's Craig Hoffman, a Redskins beat reporter. We'll be talking to you soon.
Thank you, buddy.
See you guys. Talk to you from Richmond.
Yep. Yeah, have fun in Richmond.
Be great.
All right, so good news on the Jordan Reed front. Although earlier in the show, we had heard bad news.
Well, what do you mean? What did we hear earlier?
Didn't Cake say the headline was that he wasn't going to be ready for training camp?
Questionable.
Yeah, well.
To start training camp.
Let's assume he's going to be questionable for most of training camp. That's what I would expect.
I think he's going to be eased into training camp.
Yeah. It doesn't matter if he's
it doesn't matter.
Available for he has to be available on Sundays.
Right.
Be ready for game one at Arizona.
Right, but when he gets concussed so often.
We haven't even talked about the concussion.
Yeah.
Yeah. But when you're not available for training camp, it makes being available for Sundays a big question mark.
I think it was Chris Russell, or maybe, I don't remember who said it, that basically, it might have even been you, that said if he catches the ball, just go down
right this
year.
Yeah, don't even get tackled.
Oh, I didn't say that.
Because if he gets a hit,
no,
he could be concussed or hurt.
That's why you're going to be rooting for your Terp guy, VD, Ernie Davis. He's going to catch a lot of balls this offense.
I'm kind of in the Mike Shanahan school of thinking, like, these guys sign up for it. Let's just wear them out.
I've always
just
been like that.
Just grind them. Just grind through them.
Hey. Yeah. That's why it was anti-Strasburg shutdown.
That's a little different because NFL careers are about 3 years. Yeah. Baseball careers are a lot different.
That's why I was, you know, if you're RG3 and you break in the league and you can run the ball, that's what makes you special. Keep running the ball.
Yeah.
Even if you get hurt.
That's what they have depth charts for. There's always someone behind them.
All right, phone number as always. You want to get in touch with us, 800-636-1067. We're the Junkies. Coming right back.
All right, football fans, the NFL draft is almost here, and the free Odyssey app brings you the latest coverage from the biggest sports radio stations across the country. Which players will help your team the most? Who will make a draft day trade? Will they be ready for week one? The local conversations about the team you love. All streaming free right here on the Odyssey app. AUDACY. Download it today.